Welcome to another episode of Elixir Wizards,
a podcast brought to you by Smart Logic, a custom web and mobile development shop.
This is season 12, Office Hours, where we invite you to step into our office for candid conversations with the Smart Logic team about everything from discovery to deployment to the magic of maintenance. Hey everyone, I'm Owen Bickford, Senior Software Developer at Smart Logic, and today I'm your host for episode 7. We're joined by Charles Suggs and Joel Metter, both developers at Smart Logic. Joel's our staff engineer. And in this episode, we're talking about the lovely, maybe not so lovely world of printing. We've all been on this printing journey on a recent project. I've thought more about printing on this project than any other project I've done. Is that true for you guys as well?
No.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about histories. Joel, I think you have more history just overall as a developer and obviously with printing as well. So Sure. Walk us through your history from writing things in scrolls to whatever, wherever you started.
Yeah, I started writing Twitter posts in cuneiform on clay tablets, and then it's just kind of gone from there. You all know how old I am, right?
Yeah, really dating yourself.
Yeah, I started doing printing kind of as my main line of business at a previous company in about 2009, I want to say, 2008. And we had been doing a lot of printing stuff too as consultants before that at that company, because we were working for Apple and doing some apps there that had very heavy printing stuff for their customers, which I think I'm out of my restricted time zone for that. I'm pretty sure it expired in like 2016. Anyway, if it didn't, no one cares. I know they can't pin it on me. I used to be one of the people that owned and ran a service that took HTML from people on the internet and turned it into PDFs. And that was like our main source of revenue at the company, or one of our primary sources. The entire time I was there, almost, I ran that and wrote a lot of that. So that was 11, 12 years. So I'm very intimately familiar with PDFs and the process of making PDFs from HTML and other things. And almost every project I've ever worked on that had any kind of reporting has had PDFs at some point. And that's been almost every consulting project I've ever worked on. So I've been in it for a long time, including before I started at that company doing consulting in a different place, where we did stuff like C# printing, which really was not fun.
Oh yeah, that sounds fun.
I don't remember enough of that to talk in detail, so I'm not going to try. That's the very brief version.
And then Charles, have you worked on an app before that had to do, like, where you had to think as a developer about printing at all?
Yes. And you asked about, aside from this most recent project, and prior to this most recent project, largely just write a few print styles to go alongside web styles in CSS or SAS and hide this or that, change this or that. But that was about the extent of it when it came to an app.
And so this was primarily kind of taking the same content, but applying CSS styles to modify its appearance on a printed piece of paper.
Yeah. Like if someone were to hit Control P on their keyboard or go to File and Print, that we would just adjust it to enable that content to display better in a paper medium versus a web medium, because they have different rules and restrictions.
With this project, I learned a bit about how we could just rely on the browser to generate PDFs, because these days, I don't think it's always been the case that you could just export a PDF directly from the browser. You would normally have to install some kind of Adobe products previously to make that happen. So the nice thing now is we can save at least some of the cost of building this stuff just by having the browser take care of that. It has not been easy though. I've got a laundry list here of things we've encountered as we've tried to factor printing into the equation of the features that we've been building. So it covers everything. So where do y'all want to start? Which part of the page would you like to start? At the headers and the footers, the margins, or somewhere in the middle?
The hammer that sits next to the printer.
How much we love printers, just generally.
Just love printing. I think it's worthwhile to talk about kind of the APIs that are exposed and not exposed in modern browsers. As you might imagine, as someone who ran a business that did this stuff, like I'm pretty familiar with like CSS3 and all of the stuff that CSS3 is supposed to bring to the table in terms of like control of printing. And one of the most disappointing parts of this latest project is how little browsers have moved since I got involved in this. I've been familiar with these actualities of this stuff since like 2010, 2011, and browsers have not moved like at all. Like they still suck for this. There's a little bit better control, but not much. You know, the page directive is kind of the primary point of that. And one of the big movers and shakers in this realm, at least historically, has been a company from Australia named ESLogic. And other than that one alternate thing that Owen linked me last week, and I don't remember the name of it, it's like Wheezy Print or something. Maybe that was Dan. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Someone sent me another one. Maybe that was Charles. We've all been talking about printing so much that I can't keep track who said what anywhere. But
if I sent you anything about printing, I'm as shocked as anyone else. I'm like, I'm trying not to think about it until today.
So yeah, there's kind of now like two web engines, right? There's Firefox and Chrome and whatever. It's like Gecko and
WebKit.
And then Safari's got its own version of WebKit that's like weirder and older and has different features, but it's the WebKit, and they have kind of the same printing features. And then there's ESLogic, which has the PrintXML engine. And then there's this other thing, which I think is called Wheezy Print, which has also its own rendering engine. And so the rendering engines in these other two print things are very print-oriented, so they have a lot more support for this like CSS3 page shenanigans. And ESLogic has driven a lot of that stuff and been like, you know, W3C, you have not addressed the needs of people going to print stuff. Here's some changes you should make. So I think at least Mike Day, who's like the CEO of that company, used to be part of the working group for CSS3. I don't remember, but they've written a lot of like specs and stuff. So the thing that you see in the browsers is you have this kind of partial CSS support. And then if you're willing to write a little bit of JavaScript, you can get a little further in a headless mode than you can within the browser itself, but not very far in terms of control of what's going to be on the page, what's going to be in headers, how that stuff's going to be styled, and like what's going on. And so to me, coming to browser printing again really felt like a huge step back because of the lack of features. And I really expected to be better because it's been 10 years, like 15 years. I don't know. Like it still sucks. It's really bad. I understand that. Like from a corporate perspective, Chrome doesn't care about printing. Like Google Alphabet, whatever it's called, no, doesn't care. That doesn't make them any money. They just don't care. And I think Firefox has lost so much market share and they're off going after AI and stuff. So like, I don't know what they're up to, but they also haven't responded. So it's just not a good place if you need stuff, particular things in printing. And we did. And I'll talk about a few of those, like the shims I've seen for Chrome headless, for example. I want to put the same header on every page. Okay, I can do that with the JavaScript thing, except the stuff that's there doesn't use the CSS from the page. You have to like inject style blocks. Like that's what? You can't left content out of the page onto the header. You can't, you know, pull content other than strings out of the page onto the header. You can't do all these things. Like offset printing is completely out of, like you can't do offset printing for sure. That's just not a thing you're getting from the browser. I think there are some shims like pdf.js that have more stuff, but it's kind of a big, it's like a rendering engine built inside of JavaScript that runs inside of Chrome. It's super weird. Or maybe it's a node thing. I don't remember exactly how it works, but like you run into all these like corner cases that are not covered because the people that run the browsers and volunteer to write the browsers just like do not care about this problem because no one cares about PDFs. If you're going to make a PDF, you're just going to pay someone $1 million and they're going to work it out for you like us.
Right. Yeah. I think that's kind of the root of our problem. So I want to come back to like why we did the things the way we did them. Yeah. Like some of what you're saying underlines, like we ran into browser compatibility issues was, I think, something we're kind of almost saying. So like I've really felt like whenever I was trying to solve printing problems that we were back in the world of IE versus Chrome versus Firefox. And like we had three browsers and three different behaviors for printing. You could write the same rules and in 2024, you expect everything to appear roughly the same or exactly the same. And that is not the case with
printing. So yeah, Charles, are there any kind of like weird kind of cross compatibility issues that you remember kind of like stumping your toe on, or that kind of like affected you while you're implementing?
I think the most recent one that I had encountered was in Firefox, it would add borders that didn't exist in Chrome around elements, and it would overlap them as well. And it wasn't an issue of some absolute positioning being somewhere on the page or that sort of thing that can easily cause those kinds of problems. It was just Firefox was interpreting the content and the layout very differently and the length of containers differently. And so then would overlap the next container starting content over the end of the content of the container before it. And I think, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons we decided to only support one browser with printing on that project.
I've never opened up source code for browsers. I've listened to a couple of conversations, but it seems to me maybe what's happening is, so like when you open the print dialog in whichever browser, you're essentially looking at another browser rendering engine, which you would think is the same exact engine that renders the rest of the content on the web. But it seems like it's a fork, or the behavior is just different inside that particular dialog than it is whenever it's rendering content anywhere. So there was, like, we use grid typically for layouts so that things are kind of predictable the way they're arranged on the page. I think there's weirdness like that you're pointing to about how grid was either being rendered or maybe not being rendered correctly.
Well, I think it was like the box model was different enough between the two browsers, three browsers, that we were just running into issues where like the sizing wasn't right. You know, when you open a web page in your browser, if no reset CSS has happened, every browser has its own interpretation of that. And they also have their own interpretation of what the default print styles are, right? So we're running into multiple layers of decisions that were probably made, you know, 20 years ago that we have not much control over. And all that kind of adds up to like, you don't need a whole lot of difference between two rendering engines to end up with like, okay, this is just 5 pixels off the edge of the page now, and it's gone forever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can adjust margins to get stuff back, but then other stuff starts getting rendered incorrectly.
Yeah. One thing I know Dan mentioned in our previous episode about reports and like generating reports is, you know, we touched on just briefly that like we've talked about like differences between the browsers. There's also just some content that will not fit on a page unless you shrink it so small that it's, you know, practically useless or illegible. Like there are a lot of tables in these reports and features that we've been trying to format in a way for printing. And, you know, most of the tables can, like, you can adjust the padding, the font size and everything, so things fit better on the page.
One thing you can do if you have more control of the PDFs, which you can't, this is really tough, maybe impossible with the browser, I'm not sure, but per page control is a real thing in these like more full featured PDF generators, right? Like I need my cover page to be like A4, and I actually need my report pages to be super wide. I'm going to print them on a like plotter or something, and they're like A17 or something bigger, something super long, or they're like legal size. You get into a lot more flexibility that way, where you're like, you can still print this on standard paper sizes. It's just the paper size is not like 8.5 by 11 or A4. Those are the two kind of standard, but depending on whether you're in Europe or the Americas. And I think that's a real problem for the kind of content that we were trying to generate, which is these super wide tables. We're like, okay, if you put it in landscape and we like make sure everything kind of like flows to the next line, and like we take the padding off of this thing, like, okay, it's all squeezed in there most of the time. You don't really want to be, yeah. It really sucks if you have like a name that just has, that's longer than like 50 characters, which is not too common, but it is a thing. And then, you know, we made some technical choices for, you know, time in most cases, and just like also lack of knowledge about the eventualities of where we get and, you know, normal project stuff. And what ended up happening is we just had all these like, you know, the technical assumptions about how good the browser printing would be. And it just was not at all up to task. that's on me. I was the staff engineer on this project. I should have done more research, but it just, the browsers haven't gotten anywhere. They still suck so bad at this problem. I know we're talking about printing, but people print all the time. Everyone has to do what we did on this project, which is like come up their own custom thing because the printing is so bad from the browser. So everyone has to do this if they've got anything meaningful to print.
Yeah, I think, and we're going to get to, I think, decisions we'll probably make differently in upcoming projects. But just to dig into that a little bit, a year ago when this project started, you know, we were very much not focused on printing. We had a bunch of stuff we needed to build before we could print anything of value. And so at the time we started, I think, discussing printing, you know, it's crunch time. It's almost always crunch time on a project. Yeah, I think it would have been hard to know how bad it would be without having just built a bunch of stuff, because, you know, the needs of this project might be very different from like just printing a small set of content. If you just did like a minimal prototype of printing, like can I print hello world and will it appear the same on three browsers, it might have been deceptively consistent in that case. But
yeah, you almost have to have like image magic, right, to go and do like a pixel diff.
And the other thing is we're working in Elixir and Phoenix, and there, you know, you do a cursory search for PDF in Hex, you know, our package manager, and there are a few packages. It wasn't immediately clear whether those would provide the control or the, you know, all the features we would need for the types of stuff that we were going to be printing. So that's why I think we all kind of expected that you can print in all the browsers. We print things all the time in browsers, and, or maybe not all the time, but, you know, we print things often enough that you don't really expect this kind of weirdness to pop up. And that's kind of what got us.
Mm-hmm.
I think the solution, what we would do differently if we could do it over again or in the future, would be rely on whether that's buying or building tooling for generating PDFs on the server and then downloading those to the client, and they can either save or print them to their delight. Do you have thoughts about server-side PDF generation? I know you did a bunch of research, Joel, on services.
Do I?
One of the reasons I love Elixir and Phoenix is that we get to do so much without branching out to external services and paying higher bills because of that. But this may be one of those cases where that's just a practical reality. Were there any other kind of open source tooling that you saw that might help us on this?
A lot of this comes down to like who's done the work, right? So I did do quite a bit of research into PDF.js, which I think is the name of it. And that one is actually really good. It's got a lot of support, but it was very much not reasonable to like spike out how to work that into the project at the time. I think that probably would have worked and kept, you know, long-term bills pretty low, or like one-time bills pretty low. What was the name of the thing? There's a Hex package that I did some research on. And this is how I discovered like the JavaScript stuff for Chrome, right? How to drive putting numbers and putting page numbers and putting like header text and all this stuff into headers and footers reliably on every page.
Was it Chromic?
Chrome. Yeah, that's the one. And that's like pretty reasonable, but you also run into all these issues there. I immediately ran into issues because it runs locally with our CSP stuff. So I had to figure out how to like get page content out of a live view, which I did some real shenanigans to do, because there does not appear to be a way to just be like, tell me what's in this live view right now, like the entire HTML of the page. From my standpoint, this app we've been working on, we have multiple technical challenges to solve just to get to the point where we could send any HTML to an external service, right? Or an external program on the server or whatever, because of the architecture of the app. It's especially difficult.
You point to like a critical piece of the decision we made. So we've got a bunch of upcoming work that we know we need to like build for the web, and the client also wants to be able to print it for their users, or their users will want to print it. So I think what was driving us to just rely on the browser was also that we didn't want to rebuild every view, you know, duplicate all this, you know, layout stuff and everything in like build it once for the web and then build it in a PDF form or like in a some type other template. Because anytime you do that, any change you make, whether it's requested by the client, design, or someone else on the team, requires, you know, double or more amount of work, you know, to maintain all of that stuff. So
it's easier for there to be discrepancies that come up.
Yeah, we have another app that does reporting, does heavy reporting, took a very different approach to this problem. But it's also, I would say, lower fidelity in terms of like visual design. So it can kind of get away with. Another challenge that you haven't mentioned is like how particular the client for this particular thing was about the actual like visuals of it.
Right.
If we'd been able to get away with a simpler design for these tables and stuff, these data tables, like we probably could have delivered a simpler solution quickly, but we ended up barring some of the stuff that shouldn't be in the print at all because it's from web. Like you don't want your inputs to show up, for example. Like it's almost pixel perfect representation of what's on page. And like, we did not have to do that for the other app. And so it made printing a lot simpler as a problem. There are all these kind of factors that roll together and you just end up in a mess, right? Charles, I know when you all did the most of the printing stuff, I was just kind of there making sure it was working as much as possible. Like you know all this stuff better than I do. You have all of these technical factors that go on top of each other. And then you're in the wild with one of our clients, like one of the actual people on the client team also had like some sort of Acrobat integration going on. So their printing was more weirder. So they had a different view even than we did because the PDFs were opening in Acrobat in their browser and a different rendering engine again. So PDFs have rendering engines too, right? So you're talking about the browser engine and then the print engine, and then the PDF is a separate thing on top of that with its own format. And then every PDF renderer has its own features and rendering engine too. They're pretty consistent because of how PDFs work, but they're not consistent all the way. So we had some stuff come out of that and we eventually were just like, can you just like open this and, you know, your Mac OS's preview or whatever, just make sure it looks okay there for the, for us people.
Right.
So there's all these like factors that make it hard to predict what's going to happen. And I think like, what you're saying is like, we'll try and remove some of the uncertainty there by making at least the first step in rendering things on the server. We're going to take away the, like there are 400 million people with different versions of PDF rendering in their browser. We're going to eliminate that part. So like the inconsistencies are going to be new stuff that we introduce that breaks PDFs, or the PDF rendering engines are slightly different because of this particular box that shows up in this particular PDF or whatever. So we're trying to eliminate that first step in the future because that first step turned out to be a doozy.
I think part of what was driving some of the complexity is that this is an application that we're building. It's funny. It's like kind of full circle application. So it starts as PDFs and printed material, which we're building like an interactive version of that, which requires you to think differently about the nature of that product that was, you know, designed for one format and then, you know, needs to operate a little bit differently for the web, and then has to circle back around to like, I think ideally the client would have liked this to print in exactly the same template and format as the original material, but just not something we could practically do because the difference in the web and the, you know, we're talking about dynamic content now.
Well, we did offer that as a possible solution because you can fill out PDFs. Fillable PDFs, right, is a thing, which is also a whole, I don't want to talk about it, but that's a whole thing.
I mean, that sounds like doable. I'm just trying to imagine us like rebuilding templates that looked like the page version.
Yeah, that would
yeah.
It's somewhat of a recursive app.
Right. It's a snake eating its own tail.
Well, Ouroboros is a treat.
Yes. So... okay, so we talked about some tooling. I know that the content that's going into these, I was kind of surprised at some of the ways we had to solve these problems. So part of this is, and Charles, you can speak to this somewhat, we had two different ways of tackling printing. And I think it's just the nature of different people working on different portions of the app at the same time or at different times. Part of the app would basically like print just the web view. If you clicked a print button, it would just open the print dialog for the page you were already on. There are other portions of the app where you hit print and it loads a print layout in Phoenix.
Yes, at a different route.
So can you talk a little bit about maybe some things that worked well or didn't work well in both of those approaches, some of the things you saw?
Of course, when in a situation where we had separate templates for web and print, it was easy for things to diverge, especially if we had a ticket that was specific to the web view or specific to the print view. It was easy to lose sight of, oh, well, there's a separate parallel template for this view that I should also check to see if this needs to be adjusted in the same way, or maybe it's adjusted differently because the different medium. Whereas in the situation where we were printing the same view, then, you know, sometimes if a style was updated for the web view, it was more likely to also impact the print view in an unintended way when we were printing the web view straight to the print dialog.
I don't know where this kind of started, but I was looking at some of these print layouts. And so like we had print layouts that were separate, and then we had basically CSS overrides. So with Tailwind, you can do print colon and like change font size, blah, blah, blah. And I think some of the classes that we were using for print styles were copied out of Figma, which like will set like a pixel size. And then whenever you do it that way, it means that you also need to override the line height because Tailwind, this is like one little nitpick that I have with Tailwind now after this project specifically, is that Tailwind, whenever you define your font XL, font base, whatever, it's not setting just the size, it's setting a like a rem or maybe even a pixel line height. And I think if I were to like contribute a big, this might be a big change to Tailwind, I would just make line height like maybe 1.25 or whatever. So you don't need to like go and update your line height whenever you make a pixel size font change, you know?
Like making it proportional to the font
exactly.
size.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. I think there's probably...
That stuff's also so complicated to get right because it's based on the actual font and how the font foundry has like set up the headers and footers on the font. It's such a mess. But I agree that that's not, those shouldn't be. Those shouldn't be linked.
In some of those cases, it was the actual spec was for a font size and a line height that did not match up with one of the Tailwind presets of extra small, small, what have you.
Yeah, I think a way to clean that up would be to add another, like just add a line to the Tailwind config that is like our, basically not, it's probably not text-print, but it's like text-xxs.
Correct.
Because basically we needed something smaller. It's weird. Like the pixel size of a font on the web is very different from what's on the page. So something like you would probably never render pixel size 8 or like text of 8 pixels on a web page, but on the printed page, it's actually like it was readable or usable. And because of the density of the app, that's kind of what we needed anyway. The other kind of surprise for me was that whenever we needed content to repeat across multiple pages, we could do that with our separate layout approach. And that required tables because like Joel, you're talking about this JavaScript package that could potentially repeat information across pages, but that's using like JavaScript and it's kind of hard to control. The way we did this was we built a, whenever you print a table, it will repeat headers whenever the page breaks and you've got content that's stretched across multiple pages. So these print layouts are basically like email print layouts, right? You have to use tables to get everything to operate the way you need it to. It was just kind of like, oh, we're doing that with tables now?
I mean, it makes sense. We're doing reports. It is generally tabular data. We should use tables. But yeah, like stuff gets real funky real fast.
I wasn't surprised that we were using tables within a page, but to have a quote-unquote header that's formatted and has logos and blah, 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 to make that appear across pages consistently, we had to wrap the entire kind of page in a table so that that header, quote-unquote header row would, even though it doesn't look like a table, it would appear on every page. It was just, that's one of those little gotchas that I was surprised by.
And if you take that down to footers, which is where you might often see a page count printed in a print medium, getting that number to increment per page and print in a footer when printing from the web, you got to do a lot of backflips.
Were you able to get that working? I don't even know how that would possibly, because like our app doesn't know anything about print, right? Like we have a print layout, but it doesn't know how many pages because the user is going to maybe change the margin size. They might switch from portrait to landscape. That all changes the number of pages. And because we're not generating PDFs, you know, we're just using LiveView templates, or even if they were just, you know, DeadView templates, we would not know the number of pages or which page you're looking at without some kind of wizardry.
That's actually another huge problem with printing from the browser is table of contents is extremely difficult to generate. Maybe not feasible. I'm not sure because it doesn't, it's just so lacking, right? So talking about the prints XML or Weezy, I've looked at Weezy a little bit, so I'm familiar at least with its gross features. Because of how they work, you can put references to other parts of the printout, right? The PDF into pages that are earlier in the layout. It will eventually make those consistent. So if you're like, okay, this is the link to the header on page 60, but it doesn't know page 60 yet. When it gets to that first page, it's just like, okay, this is a link out to the, like this particular anchor in my print. Chrome is not going to do that today. Like it just will not, it does not know how, because it takes a lot of work to get that information. Like you have to lay everything out and say, okay, this header actually ended up on page, you know, 45. Okay. Now I've got my table of contents. Now I got to go back through and at the right time when I'm rendering, rendered 45, the number 45 here in the correct font. And is that going to change anything later? Because I rendered 45. Well, I don't know. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on there, right? And Chrome just doesn't care. Like Alphabet doesn't care. So that's never going to be fixed. So that's the kind of problem that you can't solve with these like simplistic solutions. Like, it just isn't going to happen. And the same thing that you're talking about, like the consistent headers, like you can't do that because you don't know where you are if you don't have a page aware rendering engine. So if you're like, okay, I need to change another thing, like if you're doing a book, right? The margins on the left and right should be different depending on whether the page is the one on the left when you open the book or the right, right? So you can fake that in Chrome, sort of, but it's hard. Let's say you want to put the chapter title you're in at the top. Okay, that's out. You're not doing that in Chrome. It's just not happening, I don't think. So that's when you need something that's aware of what pages are when you're rendering if you want to get like that level of control, right? So when we think about our problem was we have this big thing. It has sections, right? And ideally, the section would be the thing that we highlight at the top of the page, right? Like every page of that section should have information about that section specifically. A little bit of context. So when you're looking at the page, you know what it is. There's some colors that go with each section, et cetera. But like, that is super difficult, maybe impossible to pull off with the browser printing. I think impossible. And that's like trivial, for example, in Prints XML. Like, I could do it in 10 minutes. Because they've built a page-aware rendering engine for HTML, basically, and it just happens to spit out PDFs. Chrome has not done that thing, so what you get is just like wild west. Like this doesn't work. Sorry about your life.
You know, Google has created a page-aware rendering engine in Google Docs.
Yes,
it has not been applied anywhere else.
So what we need to do is put all of our content into Google Docs first and then print from Google Docs. Perfect.
Yeah, naturally. All right. Problem solved.
Problem solved. So guys, I don't want to do another project where we have to think this hard about printing, but it's going to happen. So like next time.
Winter is coming.
So like I'm thinking through like, how do we actually solve this problem, right? Like I want to say like we could go the approach of we actually do have PDFs that are fixed and we're just filling in data, but that's constrained. Like there may be you know, if we're talking about lists of things, you can pre-build a table that's got 20, 100 rows or whatever, but what if you want to print 200? Like, do you just keep, I don't know, there's like, maybe I can kind of see how to like do that on a per page basis. But
if those rows expand in height variably.
So you've got a lot of problems if you're trying to start and have infinite or, you know, dynamic content, right?
Right.
So the place where fillable PDFs shine is I have a form that's fixed data. So I'm doing my taxes. Like most people can do their taxes in a fillable PDF because most people do not have complicated, like, okay, I've got 10% ownership in this company and 4% in this one. And I've got 3 401ks that matured this year. And I've got like 3 houses and I've got this rental property and my boat like fell into a whirlpool or something. Like most people don't have that. I don't own a boat, by the way. Charles boat does. Girl. Charles has a boat. Sailboat.
Not a fancy one.
I know. I was just making a joke and then just I realized that someone on the call actually has a boat. So I made it funnier. But most people are just like, I got like a 1099 and I put in my numbers and then I'm done. For most people, like a fillable PDF of their taxes is fine because they can just do it. And that's the same way with like a lot of the information we took for this app, we could have put into a fillable PDF, but then we have all these not fixed anything. And so one solution to that is you fill in the fixed part and then you put together another PDF. You generate a PDF and then stitch them together. Again, you get into trouble if you're trying to do a table of contents or something there, because now you've got two PDFs you're putting together and now you have to go and alter the first PDF or the combined PDF. Like that gets really complicated. I've done it a couple of times and I was like, maybe we shouldn't, but most people don't need a table of contents either. That's like a very specific kind of thing. So that's a solution to the problem. If you've got fixed data and then like dynamic content, you can like just produce those separately. And that's potentially a solution. It doesn't solve all the problems of like, now I have different styles.
Right.
But if you just need data in a data table and then like metadata about that data, like you'd probably do it.
At this point, I'd probably recommend different styles. Like just have a set of known quantity PDFs, whatever the styles may be. It doesn't have to be black and white, you know, outline tables or whatever, but make that a known quantity that we can fill with data and then not try to match the web to the page because they're just inherently different. And we I think we know that viscerally now. Charles, how many printers do you have on your yacht? You have like an up deck and down deck fax machine printer combo?
With a satellite dish and there's a swimming pool on top. And no, this thing has no deck. There is no electricity. There is no plumbing. It is not a wine and cheese cruiser. It is a get in and work your butt off to go really fast kind of boat.
The closest you get to a printer is like a Sharpie on your sail, basically. Like, please help me. I'm sinking.
Yes.
Kind of situation.
It's true. In fact, we're not even allowed to use electronics except for radio in very limited circumstances. And you can use a digital compass as long as it's not one of these fancy ones that tells you tactically when to change direction and stuff based on the way the wind shifts, so that it's more on your skill as a sailor.
Nice. So I think before we close the turn the page, before we turn the page on this episode of the podcast, let's talk a little bit about accessibility. You know, we think of accessibility, especially in some projects, because you know they are very much aware of like they need to support a bunch of different users with a range of different needs, and that extends to the printed page, right? Are the standards the same? Is it like AA, AAA, or is it different?
It's different. There's still, I'll talk a little bit. So mostly when you talk about accessible PDFs, you talk about PDFA standards, and there's like 4 levels of compliance, and they're all like slightly different. PDFA1 is pretty old, and I will say Chrome has an experimental thing that you can try and create PDFA compliant PDFs from Chroma Sprinter if you use the JavaScript API. You cannot do it from the web. So PDFA is basically like, there's several components. One is like, I'm going to include all of the fonts that are necessary to generate this PDF so that I know what is going to show up in the PDF, which may or may not sound reasonable to you, but the concept is like, if I'm opening a PDF on my computer from someone who created this in like India, I want to make sure that I get the fonts they used in India so that I can read what they wrote instead of whatever my computer decides to render, which is probably not going to be correct on my US English computer, right? There's also this, I forget the technical exactitudes, but there's this document structure in the same way that we have document structure in HTML. Like, you need a document structure for it to be accessible as a PDF so that screen readers will allow you to like skip around. If you've never looked at the binary format of PDFs, it's weird. And a lot of it is text in a super weird format. If you've never seen it, you're just like, I don't know what this is. But it's actually a text format with some binary like tags, and it's very strange. And then there's some like rules about how images work and how transparency is not allowed and some other stuff. But mostly it's set up to have that document structure and make sure that what you show is going to be consistent no matter where you look at it. And those are like the key point. And you just can't get that from browser printing right now, as far as I can tell. So, and then there's that's A1, A2, A3, A4. A4 is fairly new. I actually learned about that today when I went to the Wikipedia thing. But I knew about the others because we had to support those. There's also PDFX, which I think is like the most pew-pew, do whatever you want PDF. And then there's also one that I had not heard of that I saw today, which is PDFE, which I think also may be some sort of accessibility thing. Anyway, PDFA is the standard and has been for a long time.
Cool. Well, does everyone here have a printer?
Yes.
Yes.
I do not. I'm in an apartment that has a printer, so I haven't needed to buy one yet. I probably will in a few months. So what's your favorite printer? Do you have a favorite printer? Is it possible?
The Brother laser printer that is on sale and it is not networked.
Smart move. Yeah.
At my previous job, we had an old HP 5000 that we had connected to like some sort of little Apple puck in the wall. So the Apple puck was on Wi-Fi, but the printer was not. And it was a champ. My favorite was a dot matrix printer that I had as a kid that had horribly expensive color printer ribbons. Had a very expensive color ribbon, which I used immediately to print things from Microsoft Encarta, the CD-ROM encyclopedia. My mom and dad were like, you spent $45 printing this article about Egypt. And I'm like, yeah, isn't it cool?
You know, I've just unlocked a memory. So like my dad used to have a house like drafting service. So like if you need blueprints and that kind of thing, you need a drafter to essentially help an architect with that. That's what he did. And he had a plotter. Maybe we'll get some plotter projects and we can like just go real, like, I don't even know what that would, it's still PDFs, right? They're just very big PDFs. Have you ever watched a plotter? So basically what it does, you know, it's kind of like dot matrix, but it's just like a arm and it's got motors that roll the page back and forth. So it's like a big, what's the thing?
Etch-a-sketch, yeah.
Etch-a-sketch. It's like a big etch-a-sketch, but it's writing on a page and it has, you know, usually CMYK pens.
And yeah, I was going to say, it just uses like a pencil basically to write.
Right.
Doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are neat. Pens, pencils, whatever.
I personally hope that we don't have to do a plotter project, although it would be fun. Charles could stretch his nerves legs.
Right. Yes.
That could be fun.
In the future, we shall be printing large pages through. Maybe not. All right. Let's tone it down. I don't know. I had to throw the pun in there somewhere. So, all right. We're turning the page. We're toning it down. I think that means it's time to call it a day. We've exhausted. I'm out of ink. I don't know. Anyone else got a pun you want to throw in before we shut off this episode?
No, I don't. Sorry.
All right. All right. It's time to rip the holes off the side of the page then.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Time to tear off the...
Go fix the paper jam.
Right.
It's so satisfying. Well, you print that banner and you get to do that big rip, man. Super good.
Yeah.
All right. So in the future, our projects will only be dot matrix printed.
You know, that sounds better in a lot of ways. That really sounds right. Much easier.
Yeah. You can only print text on a, right, on a grid. Cool. Sure. Well, thanks everyone. Thanks you guys for joining us. And yeah, we're going to call it. We'll be back next week with more Elixir Wizards.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Elixir Wizards is a production of Smart Logic.
You can find us online at smartlogic.io, and we're at Smart Logic on Twitter.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review.
This episode was produced and edited by Paloma Pachenik for Smart Logic.
Join us next week for more Elixir Wizards Office Hours as we deep dive into another aspect of the software development lifecycle.
Hey, this is Yair Flicker, president of Smart Logic, the company that brings you this podcast. Smart Logic is a consulting company that helps our clients accelerate the pace of their product development. We build custom software applications for our clients, typically using Phoenix and Elixir, Rails, React, and Flutter for mobile app development. We're always happy to get acquainted, even if there isn't an immediate need or opportunity. And of course, referrals are always greatly appreciated. Please email contact@smartlogic.io to chat. Thanks, and have a great day.